how do you revitalize areas such as the South Bronx? And how do you stop the cancer from spreading into other communities?
Well, again, I've been over this road, and I'd like to recount it. I have been working in respect to the South Bronx for the last 12 years, since the 68 campaign, and first organized the First Citizens Committee, which was headed by a man named Patterson, who works for the Bankers Trust Company on 149th Street, and developed the first ideas, for example, regarding industrial parks in the South Bronx. Also, I have generically been with Ted Kennedy, the one who's gotten aid for the community action agencies like Bedford-Stuyvesant and South Bronx in that effort. And other things like the attraction of business concerns up there through the solicitation of other business concerns in the city, all of which can help the South Bronx. The fact that New York State, New York City and state are in difficult financial situations has been a great impediment, but seemingly we're on the edge of a better deal there. For example, it would have cost $10 million about 6 years ago, well, five or six years ago, to buy the Mott Haven Railroad Yards, and that would have been a marvelous way to begin to bring that area back, but we have been we were unable to get the $10 million in the city of New York, which is very sad. Then in the housing field, I have been extremely active, respecting those who are willing to give what is called sweat equity in order to rehabilitate structures which are subject to rehabilitation and make a new base in the area. Are some of the area is going to have to be bulldozed down. There is no other way, and made into a park or parks. I'm right on top of all those things and anxious only to be able to continue to work on them.
Another question on the subject. Yeah. Because the Jewish vote is so important to the city of New York, do you feel that Liz Holtzman and yourself see eye to eye on Israel, or there are major differences?
I have no idea. Ms. Holtzman has not disclosed her particularized views on Israel, whereas I have, because I'm, as you may know, the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee, and therefore it's necessary that I should. Now, my views are that the shorter range problem, and that's where I'm rather with Reagan than with Carter, is to have a true appreciation and to act accordingly of the security importance of Israel as an enclave of strength, military strength, and security in the area, and more indispensable to the United States' interest than ever because of the sensitivity of the area, especially on the oil question. So long as Israel is there, there is an element which would otherwise be irreplaceable, and that's of great importance to us. Whereas I think Carter sees it more in terms of an overall peace, and that's been one of the reasons why he's fumbled so badly in respect of Israel. Now, what Ms. Holtzman thinks about that, what she thinks about the settlements on the West Bank, where I feel only settlements needed for security should be the settlements that are there. But I don't believe either in coercion on Israel. She's too brave and too delicately situated to be coerced by the United States, and she means too much to us to have her effectiveness in terms of security impaired by having her arm twisted. Those are my views.
Senator?
Sure.
I just glanced at this statement on the aged.
Right.
Do you have any position on...
I believe in keeping them walking and in keeping them working. And example A is me. The commercials I have no opinion about with respect to the general election. But the commercials in the primary campaign were, as President Ford said, a very low-level campaigning. And I thought they were coarse, very unfair, and vulgar in terms of seeking to make people feel that I was doddering and about to die. And in some of the quotes, you get the feeling that there was a wish that I would. So that was pretty low-level stuff. Now, as to his defense posture, I think that he's ready to buy and pay for, with the United States money, just about anything that the admirals and generals want to dish up. Whereas I examine every weapon system, as I must under the Constitution, with the civilian control of the military, in order to judge whether it's good for our country and whether it's cost efficient. And I will continue to do so. I think that's a very big difference. I have, somewhat different. I'll distinguish it, if I may. Sure. I have said that I would even consider, as an element of a deal for the hostages, the military spare parts, provided that I were convinced that otherwise there would be the dismemberment of Iran by the Soviet Union and Iraq. Now, that would require hearings on the part of the Foreign Relations Committee or some more definite orientation than we have. In short, I don't want to get sucked into a deal where we're in bed with all these communist countries. But they do have our hostages. This may be a chance to get them out, and I don't think that we can reject it out of hand, because it involves spare parts, especially as it is highly against the American interest to allow Iran to be dismembered, notwithstanding that Iran is an international outlaw.
Senator Jack, yeah. Liz Holtzman has claimed in reference to state of New York City that she could deliver more because the Democrats are in power in the Senate, and the lowest ranking Democrat can deliver more than the highest ranking Republican.
Well, that is not true. My own record is that single-handedly, without Buckley, because he was unsympathetic, I piloted through the first bill to help New York City in 75, and with Moynihan, an excellent partner, the second bill in 78. And the support of my side of the aisle is indispensable, but even more than that, I think by now it's generally acknowledged that my own standing is very high on both sides of the aisle. So, certainly the seniority I've earned and the credit cards I've earned in 24 years are not going to be replaced by a freshman senator for a very long time. Thank you all very much, ladies and gentlemen.
In Albany for tonight's senatorial debate, which has been sponsored by the League of Women Voters. We will be covering this debate for the next hour. Your moderator for tonight's debate is Elizabeth Hubbard, the president of the New York State League of Women Voters.
Good evening. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization whose goal is to promote the informed participation of citizens in government. For that reason, we've arranged this debate between the major candidates for the office of United States Senator from New York State. We've invited the nominees of the five recognized parties in this state. Senator Jacob Javits is the nominee of the Liberal Party. Presiding Supervisor Alphonse D'Amato is the candidate of the Republican, Conservative, and Right to Life parties. Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman is the candidate of the Democratic Party. We're holding the debate in the Legislative Office Building here in Albany. and it's being televised in most areas of the state. We chose the state capitol for the site of this event to remind voters that the office of United States Senator has a statewide constituency and must be responsive to the breadth of interests of this great state. Now for the format. During the first half of the meeting, questions will be asked by members of the audience on the subject of domestic policy and the economy. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer each question. Following this series of questions, there will be a time for rebuttal in which the candidates may defend their own views and challenge those of their opponents. Each candidate will have 2.5 minutes for rebuttal. Then the second half of the program will be devoted to foreign policy and national defense, and the format will be the same: questions, answers, and rebuttal. Tonight, the questions will be asked by the audience. They were submitted as the audience arrived to a panel of officers of the League of Women Voters who have chosen the ones to be selected to ensure a variety of subject matter. I've asked the audience not to applaud during the debate because this takes time from the candidates. The candidates have drawn the location of seating and their order of speaking by lot. Let's get to the first question.
I'm Natalie Dorkin of Albany.
My question is, what are your priorities on improving the health care of Americans?
Senator Javits, you're first.
My priority would be first a national health plan, which would utilize the existing facilities of all kinds, including health maintenance organizations, group practice units, insurance companies, if they can meet reasonable standards in terms of cost and service, and to be done on a regional basis so that there is regional adjustment to various problems which arise. My theory and concept would be to reduce the cost of health care by its complete mutualization on a per capita basis, which is the health maintenance organization idea. Until we get to that point, because it's going to take doing, and I believe we should bring it in by classes. I would start with mothers and children. And then as our facilities and experience catches up, that we bring them in by classes. And where possible, I would exempt large masses of workers who, with their employers, may bargain out a health plan which at least meets the federal minimum standard. In my own judgment, this is the best basis with state and federal governments combined to pick up the tab for those who cannot pay, just like we're doing in a sense, except there is a contribution in Medicare, the same general idea. In my judgment, this should be the objective. Until we get there, I have actually worked hard at getting health maintenance organizations set up, facilitating group practice units, improving medical facilities in the country, such, for example, as sending public health doctors into slum areas. Also, again, something which I sponsored, enabling hospitals in slum areas who are now...
Mr. D'Amato, you're next.
Finish the sentence. Who are now heavily weighted with patients to their emergency rooms to get clinical facilities.
Mr. D'Amato.
Yes, I am very fearful of some of the present pending legislation or that legislation which has been proposed, basically the Kennedy health insurance plan, which would cost this nation as much as $60 billion annually to implement. It seems to me that we've got to recognize that those monies come from someplace, from someone. And if we put that kind of burden on local municipalities, the employers of both federal and state employees, on the private business sector in one fell swoop, that it will be the kind of crushing blow that will have maybe catastrophic effects. Therefore, I believe a system should be designed that, number one, would deal with that problem which appears to face so many people, so many working people, middle class homeowners and taxpayers, that of the catastrophic illness, I do believe there has to be a co-insurance plan and a program that move towards ensuring that people aren't wiped out of their life savings. I think that can be done on a private and as well as a government-sponsored insurance program. In addition, I think that the movement towards the health maintenance organizations is a very valid way in which to reduce medical costs in areas. I think that we've got to get under control the bureaucracy that creates so much paperwork, and ask any doctor when a Medicaid patient comes to him, in many cases they are reluctant to undertake the care or the treatment of those patients as a result of the tremendous paperwork and the unrealistic fee schedules that are paid in many cases, thereby pushing great numbers of working people and poor into more expensive situations, particularly as they relate to the government subsidies. So it is a problem that I think that we can deal with, we must deal with successfully, because it involves tens of billions of dollars.
I think our present system is a patchwork system and doesn't adequately cover the elderly, women and children, and many working people in this country. I would like to see an expansion of the Medicare program so that senior citizens can get covered for prescription drugs, for eyeglasses, for dental care, so that they do get their 80% reimbursement of reasonable doctor's bills, and they're not getting that now. I would like to see the child health assurance program go into effect. Right now, we have a very serious problem in terms of the high infant mortality rate that we have in this country. I would also like to see a national health insurance system go into effect, but with stiff cost containment provisions. Another serious problem that we have is environmental hazard, which cause, in many cases, very serious problems. We've seen that in this state in Love Canal. We have serious problems with respect to contamination of our drinking water in various places around the state. We have got to deal with the very serious problems of environmental hazards as well. And finally, we have to deal with the problem of the cost of Medicaid. I'm very pleased to see that the president seems to be supporting now an increased federal takeover of the cost of Medicaid. The present system imposes a very severe burden on the state, on counties, on cities in New York. And I would like to see the federal government pick up a greater share of the cost of that, and that's one of the things I fought for in the House of Representatives, and that's one of the things I intend to fight for in the United States Senate. I think that this country can afford to give decent health care and assure it to all Americans.
Thank you. May we have another question?
My name is Joseph A. Cooley from Cohoes. My question, are our immigration laws working the way they should? If not, what would you do to make them work?
Mr. D'Amato, you're first with this one.
Yeah, I think we have a patchwork of immigration laws that does very little in terms of reflecting, in many cases, those immigrants and those people who are seeking to gain access to this country legally and who've filled out the various forms and requirements and are waiting. And by the same token, we have an uneven policy, and I would make reference to the Cuban immigration that's just taken place recently. I believe that we've handled that in an abominable, abysmal manner because we didn't insist on screening process. Yes, I would have insisted that they be returned, those immigrants, and then the Cuban refugees be screened under the law. They should be admitted under a hardship basis, but not simply to break the law, to come in with a policy where we literally put tens of thousands of people, many who really don't qualify under any legal standard to seek entry to this country. I think it's a policy that has worked hardships in many of our communities, and it gives great doubt and raises great doubt in the minds of so many of our citizens in terms of this government and its policies. I think that we need strong, tough laws dealing with those who would employ illegal aliens. We haven't had them. We haven't insisted on them. And so we have a need to see to it that the laws are strengthened, that the quotas realistically reflect those people who want to gain entrance to this country, and we should see to it that they do it in accordance with the law. Now, I honestly believe that there have been many attempts legislatively to see to it that, again, that employers who would employ illegal aliens knowingly would suffer some very restrictive punishments because many of the illegal aliens have been taken advantage of as well. And, of course, in the state of New York, many people pay a great penalty in many of the communities as a result of the social service drain
Thank
that
you.
Is placed upon them. So there is a definite need
Thank you. Time's
for revision
up.
In this area.
Ms. Holtzman?
Well, the Immigration Service is one of the agencies of the federal government that's out of control and cannot enforce the laws effectively. And one of the reasons for this is that it has been a stepchild of the Department of Justice for a very long time. It hasn't been given the resources. It hasn't been given 20th century technology. You would not believe, but the fact of the matter happens to be that the Immigration Service keeps track by hand of everyone who comes to this country. It is an impossibility, and therefore we never know who comes, and we never know who leaves. A while ago, there was an order that Iranian diplomats should leave the country. Well, the Immigration Service lost track of 108 of them. It never knew whether they had left, whether they were still here, and if they were here, where they were. Obviously, this is a very serious problem. And one of the things that I've tried to do in Congress is to try to bring the Immigration Service into the 20th century, to give it computerization and modern technology so that it can effectively enforce the laws, and secondly, to require the appointment of a special investigator to deal with the problems of mismanagement and corruption within the agency. Whatever our policies are, we've got to have an agency that can enforce them adequately, and we don't now. And we've got to have someone to insist that this agency be capable of enforcing the law. With respect to the policy, I'm glad to say that we have reformed our refugee policy so that Congress has more of a say in who is allowed to come to this country. With respect to the Cuban arrivals, I said from the outset that Castro should not determine America's immigration policy, but that we should screen the people who come. Finally, the administration agreed with me, and finally, we do have a screening with respect to those who are coming here, but it should have not have happened in the way that it did.
Thank you. Mr. Javits.
There's little doubt about the fact that the Cuban and Haitian incursion swamped our facilities, caught us by surprise. And there was really no way, unless we had prepared well in advance, to keep out this human tide, except to try to throw them back on Castro, and that would have probably been impossible with the great Cuban population of Florida and Cuba, many of whom helped to get Florida and Miami, many of whom helped to get them out. But I thoroughly feel that the Immigration Service has been a stepchild, because we haven't known how to handle it. We reformed it once. I was a party to that early in my time in the Senate, and also a party to the admission of the displaced persons, which was such a great success to the United States. My feeling is we have to start with the undocumented aliens here. That's a very serious problem of around an estimated 9 to 12 million, an awful lot of people. In my judgment, there ought to be some kind of an amnesty for those who were well-established and settled and have been here, let us say, for 7 years and behaved themselves in the interim. And then I believe that the other way we can help is by helping Mexico to materially absorb its own people so that they can earn a living there rather than to flood over into the United States. And finally, I do believe that periodically, our quota system has to be revised, and the time for a revision, I think, is now, in order to take greater realistic understanding of those who should enter in terms of our own interest, because it's not those who want to enter. I think half the world wants to enter the United States, but it's a question of what the United States can allow in terms of its own economic and social interest.
Thank you. May we have another question?
My name is Phyllis Goldstein, and I'm from Albany. My question is, do you favor the present welfare system? If not, what changes would you support?
Ms. Holtzman, you're first on this one.
Well, there's several difficulties with the present welfare system. One is, who pays for the cost? And I believe that it's unfair to place the cost burden on the state of New York and on localities. Welfare is a national problem, and the federal government ought to be picking up the cost of the burden of welfare. And I've introduced legislation, and I have fought as a member of the House Budget Committee for a greater federal takeover of the cost of welfare and Medicaid to the state of New York and the counties of New York. If the federal government were to act in that way, it would relieve our tax burden by more than $1 billion a year. Secondly, I think we ought to have a more effective way of allowing and encouraging those who are on welfare to find adequate employment and to find employment, period. That means, in some cases, an improved system of daycare, more flexible hours of work for mothers who have children and are unable to work for that reason. I think also we have to do a better job with respect to job training and employment. And I think, in addition, we've got to do a better job about creating jobs, period. It's awfully hard to send welfare people into the job market when we have high unemployment to begin with, and you have welfare people competing with unemployed people, competing with newcomers into the job market. We have not made the kind of commitment I think we ought to make in this country to the creation of additional jobs. I think we've got to rebuild this nation's economic base, and particularly our outmoded industrial base in New York State, to create additional jobs. I think we also ought to be creating additional jobs in the public sector on an interim basis to deal with the problem of rebuilding our antiquated infrastructures, our water supply systems, our bridges, our roads, our tunnels, all of which are, in many cases, in very serious need of repair and rebuilding. These are the kinds of things that I would support.
Thank you. Mr. Javits?
The main problems respecting welfare are dealt with in a bill which I've introduced in the Senate and which Congressman Rangel of New York has introduced in the House, which is called the Family Protection Act. The purpose of that act is to equalize, on the basis of a minimum, payments to welfare families throughout the United States, so that one place does not, or a place like New York City, for example, or New York State, does not become a center for people to flock for welfare because you can do better there. Secondly, to change the formula, and that's going to be very tough in the Congress, but I believe it can be done. People may remember that we fought it out early in Nixon's time, and we lost. This is about 10 years ago, and this battle has to be fought again. New York State, in my judgment, suffers unfairly at least $1 billion a year because of the difficulty of getting fair payment for welfare. And lastly, on work, there are still states that penalize a family where the father is in the home in terms of welfare. That's absolutely unconscionable. Secondly, I have myself worked out in CETA and in other programs means by which people can have an opportunity to work, but one of the big problems there is daycare slots. And so we ought to make it possible for the business community, as they do in many countries, to supply daycare slots to welfare women or women on welfare with children who want to work but who have no way of doing it unless they have that opportunity, in view of the fact that the welfare slots, child care slots available are just about 1 in 10 compared to the need. I believe that network of activities will help our state and at the same time help the welfare families. Legal services
Time's
to the poor
up.
Have taught us that they want dignity beyond everything else.
Thank you. Mr. D'Amato.
I think that the welfare system that we have today in this state and in this nation is absolutely scandalous and shocking. It, number one, does not give to people the opportunity to gain the mainstream entry that they should into the real job market. Number two, it has created a situation where, in many cases, it rewards people for no work and penalizes the taxpayers and the workers. It has come down so very hard on the working middle-class taxpayers of the state. It is one of the reasons that we are the highest taxed in terms of corporate taxes, income taxes, and local real property taxes. It accounts for more than 50% of the taxes of most of the upstate counties, and it continues to soar. I haven't been in Congress the past 8 or 10 years, making part of the system, which is a bureaucracy that is insensitive, that is shockingly inept, that rewards people again for no work. And I'm wondering why we've had a situation where Congress attempts to establish workfare and give to the states the ability to set up reasonable requirements so that able-bodied recipients would be required to report to work. Why one of the people on this panel, a congresswoman, would vote no. It seems to me that that flies in the face of attempting to move people off of the welfare rolls. It seems to me that when we talk about real jobs and job opportunities, our people aren't looking for a government make work job. We need training programs for these young people, hooked into industry and hooked into business. They need the incentives to move off of welfare. We need workfare. When we identify huge areas of waste and misappropriation, we find the Congress, instead of allowing the Inspector General to cut off the hundreds of millions and indeed billions of dollars of waste, voting down that kind of legislation. And I would suggest that this kind of liberal giveaway philosophy that has made New York State the Cadillac of welfare and created a millstone around the necks and backs of the working middle class taxpayers of this state.
Thank you. This is the time we've set aside for rebuttal on the questions you've heard concerning domestic policy and the economy. Mr. D'Amato, you're first.
You can't have welfare unless we're, or welfare reform unless we're willing to change it and work for the meaningful kind of change and indicate that, yes, that we're going to take an inequitable formula, a formula that penalizes this state well over $1 billion annually in welfare and Medicaid. And, you know, it's not Senator Javits or Congresswoman Holtzman who've been fighting to change this system, who've been loaning their weight of their office to this. It's taken an election year to bring them out on this question. And I respect their ability and their work in other areas. But as Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who has at least raised his voice and taken on his own president and taken on his own party and said, look, this formula penalizes working taxpayers of this state, and we need a change. And for the first time, it appears as though the Carter administration promises some help in the area of Medicaid, help that we need so desperately because the tax burden continues to rise in every single city and county. We need a cap on Medicaid. We should have been working for that, working to change that situation a long time ago. And not only is it the welfare formula that penalizes it, but it's the fact that we allow and we have allowed for not just this year or last year, but for 25 years, certain states to literally